What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, January 15th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The drama involving the TikTok app in the U.S. is spurring an unexpected alternative. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, today's inflation data comes in below analyst expectations, and Wall Street appears to like it. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And for almost 3 years now, Diane, we've been hearing from Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell and other governors that the inflation target is, has, and always will be 2%. But the December CPI clocked in at 2.9% on an annual basis. That's up from 2.7% in November. So it seems like there's still a long way to go to reach that goal, if that goal is attainable.
That's exactly right. And then what we're seeing is the Fed, of course, is going to pause. They've already signaled that in January. The good news is that inflation looks like it will improve a little bit more as we move into the beginning of the year. The year-on-year comparables actually get much lower as we get into the beginning of the year, which opens the door still for an additional rate cut in March. That said, what matters going forward is, what are the changes to policy? And we just don't know how the policy mix is going to fall out until the incoming administration actually is sworn in and they start to issue, they're expecting about 100 executive orders on the first day, which will include tariffs as well. The Fed will not front run policy. They are, you know, going to be in a position where they're still in restrictive territory, even as they continue to cut a bit early in the year. But we do think they'll stop short on that cutting process as we get into the middle and latter part of the year because of concerns that a floor is forming under inflation and a risk that we could see a reacceleration in inflation, at least by our scenarios, depending on which tariffs the new administration pursues.
Yeah, a lot of policy questions about what exactly will the Trump administration do regarding tariffs. They will be answered in just a matter of days, and I guess you cross that bridge when you get to it. But there is some unvarnished, unadulterated good news in this report, and that is shelter inflation continues to retreat.
Exactly. And that's one of the things we had been expecting to roll over. And that's one of the reasons we're also optimistic about the near term in terms of inflation as we move into 2025. We've seen rents roll over and it's starting to show up. And also home values are not going up like they once were. it still doesn't mean everything's affordable. The level is still very high for many people, and I think that's important to acknowledge, especially for the basics of food and shelter. But the good news is, at least we're not seeing that pace of increase accelerate. That is actually stabilized and started to come down, and that is very, very important. That's a third of the CPI.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today to help us break down the December Consumer Price Index report. Coming up, TikTok users find an alternative ahead of the platform's potential shutdown in the U.S.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As TikTok faces an uncertain future, Americans are flocking to Red Note, a similar Chinese platform now topping Apple's App Store chart in the U.S. Let's learn about it from Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VRAR in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. Now, before I explain how this migration to Red Note might as well be a storyline out of The Simpsons, explain to us what Red Note is and what Red Note means.
Sure. So Red Note, one distinction, because there's a lot, I'm hearing a lot of people say that Red Note is the Chinese version of TikTok. That's not the case. TikTok does not operate in China. There is a Chinese version of TikTok called Douyin, which is also owned by ByteDance. But Red Note is a completely separate app. It's made by a completely separate company, also a Chinese company. And it's actually almost more similar to like Pinterest and Instagram than directly to TikTok. But that's what Red Note is as an app. And Red Note, I've seen the spelling, but I don't even want to try to pronounce what the actual Chinese name for Red Note is. But obviously Red Note has some reference to the Red Little Book, which is, you know, kind of the communist sayings, communist statements is, that's sort of the reference that a lot of people are making to it.
Right. That's what makes it sound like satire almost, that hundreds of thousands of people are getting ready for a TikTok ban by going to another social media application that is a reference to Mao Zedong. So, you know, I guess reality trumps art all the time, Matt. We're talking about the migration to Red Note, a similar video sharing platform, social media platform, as the TikTok ban draws ever closer, with Matt Wren, tech expert and founder of VRAR in Chicago. Now, what's going to happen? We had the Supreme Court hearing on the TikTok ban on Friday, and my takeaway from how the arguments evolved is that chances are the Supreme Court's going to come back and say, yes, the ban probably passes constitutional muster, but we're going to hold off on it until an American owner is found. Does that seem to be like a consensus view inside the tech community as well?
I would say to a certain degree, that's certainly the hope. The U.S. government and ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, they seem to kind of be in a game of chicken of, you know, who's really going to go, who's going to take this as far as they can. Are they actually going to have to ban TikTok before ByteDance would be willing to sell it? That's one of those questions. There's some irony in the fact that, you know, the U.S. government is basically saying this app can't exist or it shouldn't be in the United States. There's privacy and security concerns. And so what they're doing is, frankly, taking an action of banning it, which is similar to something that the Chinese government would actually do to their own citizens and their own software. You know, so there's some irony there that, hey, we need to protect you from China by acting like China. But, you know, the consensus of what they can do versus what they will do, I don't want to predict what the Supreme Court's going to say. I would hope that there's not going to actually be a ban going into effect, but we'll see. I mean, we nobody knows at this point.
Now, there are, you know, a lot of popular video sharing apps in the United States. I mean, it seems like Meta has jumped into that particular market with both feet. You have the Reels function both on Facebook and on Instagram. So if the Supreme Court does force a divestiture to an American property, does it look like Meta is well positioned to take advantage of that?
Well, I mean, Meta has their own competing product, and actually among the TikTok community, that's actually one of the big sort of the memes and the hashtags that are throwing right now is to actually black out Reels and black out what's happening on Meta, because Meta, let's face it, Meta paid for a lot of the lobbying that actually related to the TikTok ban. So, you know, some of the heavy TikTok users are almost saying we should punish Meta by not using Reels because of the TikTok ban while it's in effect. The question of whether I don't think Meta could or would buy TikTok, I imagine that would be, you know, kind of monopolistic as well. But I know that there have been a couple of American, I think there's an American billionaire, I can't remember his name, who's offered to basically buy TikTok's U.S. assets. So the hope would be, yes, if there is a ban that does go into effect, that is very short-lived, that an American company does buy the TikTok assets from ByteDance, and that it's all resolved very quickly. But, you know, could Meta ultimately see more users as a result of this? I'm sure that's a possibility in the long run, assuming the ban takes effect and actually stays.
Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VRAR Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, using plastic to pay for a medical procedure or a doctor's visit.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Doctors, dentists, and even veterinarians are pushing medical credit cards, offering quick financing but raising concerns about costs and patient pressure. Joining us to discuss their use is Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, BankRate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And how do these medical credit cards, how do they differ from regular plastic, and how are they the same?
They have really high interest rates, for starters. Care Credit, for example, which is the best-known medical and dental and veterinary card, that one has a 32.99% APR. That compares with about 20% is the average for all cards. The other thing that people really need to know is these deferred interest promotions. So they say 0% interest on that card. It depends on the provider and, you know, some other factors, but the term could be anywhere from 6 to 24 months. Well, when it's 0% deferred interest, that means if you don't pay the full amount by the time the clock runs out, then they go back and they charge you retroactively for all of the interest that would have accumulated back to day one. Some retail cards do that, like home improvement stores and jewelry stores, among others. You need to be really careful about that.
And then when we talk about how these products are offered, doctors, dentists, veterinarians all use, some of them, offer these products to their patients. When does the offer come in, and is it done so in a clear manner in which the patient knows what they're getting into?
It's not always clear, unfortunately. This is point-of-sale financing, basically. So you might be presented this at the billing department's office or section of the doctor's office. Sometimes you even hear of people being presented with these terms and conditions, like literally in the dentist's chair or on the doctor's table. You know, it can be a stressful time to be making a decision. You know, if you're told that you need some sort of procedure or your pet needs a procedure, there's often not time to really think clearly and look through the fine print. It's actually very similar to store credit cards. You know, sometimes people get into trouble with those too because you really need a new refrigerator or a new set of tires, and you're at the checkout counter and you're thinking, well, how am I going to afford this? And then all of a sudden you get presented with this card, and those too have high interest rates. Now, to be fair, you know, proponents would say access to credit is important, and they would point out that maybe people can't otherwise afford these kind of things. I just think it's a slippery slope. There are sometimes alternatives, like maybe you can negotiate some sort of payment plan with the doctor or hospital. Sometimes that's a better bet.
So in general, if this is offered to you, should you say no, or should you just look over the paperwork first and maybe get back to them on the offer?
Yeah, you have to be really careful. The time that it works best is if you can pay in full before that 0% deferred interest promotion expires, if there is a 0% promo. You know, if there is, and if you are really confident that you can pay it off in time, that actually can be a deal. Otherwise, you know, you might need to make some trade-offs in terms of, is this really necessary? Is this the best way to pay for it? It's interesting because medical debt is actually being treated a lot more favorably by credit bureaus nowadays. So, you know, we want to pay our bills back, of course, but, you know, often it's actually better to keep it as medical debt and try to negotiate something there as opposed to turning it into credit card debt, which is treated less favorably, has really high interest rates. It just makes me nervous that people are dragging these things out for a long time at very high APRs.
Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst, BankRate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A ceasefire and hostage agreement is forged in Gaza. The details next. And a CBS News special report. A leading agency cites budget issues in downgrading Chicago's credit rating. In Personal Finance Wednesday, it's important to put together a solid plan as you look ahead to caring for your parents. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 683 points. The NASDAQ is up 442, and the S&P 500 is up 102. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, sunshine mixing with clouds, breezy. Remaining very cold, a high of 22, but the real feel temperatures in the single digits. 16 at O'Hare, 17 at Midway. It's 1231.
CBS News special report. There's some confusion after mediators reported a ceasefire and hostage release deal between Israel and Hamas after 15 months of war. CBS's Margaret Brennan says the deal has Hamas releasing hostages in stages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners held by Israel.
It has been negotiated with the agreement of the brother of Yahya Sinwar, the architect of that brutal assault on Israel. His brother signed off on this deal, I am told, by high-level U.S. and local sources.
People have taken to the streets of Gaza and Israel to celebrate the deal. CBS's Robert Berger is in Jerusalem.
Both in Israel and in Gaza, people are exhausted from this war. For the families of the hostages, it's been a huge trial, but actually for the whole country.
But there's late word from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office that a ceasefire deal has not been reached yet. It says some issues remain unresolved, but says those details will hopefully be finalized tonight. CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
It's 1232. The city of Chicago's credit rating has received a downgrade. S&P says it took the actions due to issues with the 2025 budget, including limited options for new revenue and the lack of a plan to cut spending. City Chief Financial Officer Jill Jaworski says the lower rating doesn't accurately reflect the strength of the city's credit or its ability to meet its pension and debt obligations. It's 1232 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. Lots of interpretations of the December Consumer Price Index report, but the markets agree. It's a hit, especially today.
Well, good afternoon, Robin. Thanks for having me on. You know, it wasn't just incredibly dovish as far as the report goes. I mean, core came in at 0.2%, but it was just the market was just relieved that it wasn't really like that inflation wasn't showing signs of coming back. We've had some very hot numbers recently, and that's caused bond yields to go up and the stock market to sell off. And this is finally between yesterday's PPI and today's CPI. Finally, some numbers that came in that made more sense and was more what the markets had expected. So we're getting a huge relief rally in the S&P and in NASDAQ, even more so. S&P's up over 1.5%. I think NASDAQ's up 2% already today. So we're back above flat for the year as we go back and forth based on the data. And we also had great bank earnings this morning, too. So a lot of good stuff coming out today, and you see it in the stock prices.
It's the big question, and I guess it's a question that's going to be answered come next Monday on Inauguration Day, is what will the incoming Trump administration, the second non-consecutive term, what is rhetoric and what is reality when it comes to tariffs, and how is that going to impact inflation policy?
Yeah, I mean, if tariffs get too large, it certainly will cause inflation. So that's a concern. You also see that the dollar has strengthened since Trump has been elected. So and also CEO sentiment has gone up. So definitely corporations are happy and the dollar is happy. But we'll have to see what happens with inflation, because that is definitely driving stock prices. And we see that today, as I said, with the CPI and then the PPI yesterday. If inflation could stay under control, we're going to have a good year this year, but that's a big if.
And then let's backtrack a little bit. We talked about the beginning of earnings season, fourth quarter earnings reports coming out, starting with the big banks. Was there a theme out of J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and Wells Fargo, all of which saw their stock pop today? Was there a particular reason why?
Yeah, the biggest theme was investment banking revenue skyrocketed in all these banks, Citigroup as well. So across the board, you saw that. So deals were being made more in the fourth quarter, and that's a good sign going into 2025. We'll see if it holds. But also the CEOs, another theme was that all the CEOs said that sentiment was getting better and that they all raised their forecast for 25. So, you know, it does look good for the banks. The banks always lead earnings. So that's the first glimpse we get of earnings. We haven't had any tech yet. So we'll see what happens in technology and other sectors. But certainly the banks are healthy. And, yeah, with the yield curve where it is and rates where they are, they should be making money. And they did. So they've come in. They've done their job. Now let's see what the rest of the earnings reports come out in the rest of the month.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, putting together a financial plan to make sure that your parents are taken care of.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. This afternoon, we're putting the focus on putting together a plan to care for aging parents. Let's tap the expertise of Sherry Greco-Rikas, co-founder of Rappaport Rikas Capital Management in Chicago and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And this really tackles a source of time and expense for a lot of people as they get older, and that is caring for their aging parents. And how do you go about making a purposeful plan to attack that phase of life without putting your own finances in danger?
That's a great point, and we're seeing more and more people are living longer and children are helping their aging parents. But I think one of the first things you have to start with is good communication. You don't want to overstep, but you want to talk with your parents, kind of get a lay of the land. What are their expenses? There may be additional medical expenses. Do they need care part-time, full-time? How is that going to get paid? So really opening up the lines of communication and starting with the budget and expenses is probably the first step.
Now, this is a story, it's a financial story, but it's also a relationship story, because in some instances, the child or the adult child has to actually sit their parents down, find a time to actually have that conversation. And it may be a conversation that one party or the other party is not ready to have. On the other hand, you could be talking about proactive parents who will sit the kids down and lay out all the documents and the budgets and what they want to have done. So what is the more typical scenario in your experience?
Typically, it's usually brought on by the children. The parents have been taking care of their finances for a very long time, and a lot of times they don't want to give it up, but they do need some help. And one point that I do advise a lot of my clients for themselves and their parents is take a credit check. That gives you the lay of the land, but also you want to make sure that there aren't bills that, you know, have been past due or compromised, or anyone got, you know, your parents' credit cards. So taking that credit check might be a good way to start the discussion. But, you know, it's just the more open lines of communication, the better in the long run, because you don't want to reach a point when all of a sudden there's a panic. You want to be proactive and set it up. But it can be a very tricky conversation.
Now, a lot of the things we're talking about today, discussing care plans, reviewing insurance and legal documents, creating a budget, these are all things to avoid time and expense. But there are some benefits out there that you could take advantage of, including that there are some tax advantages if you become a caregiver to an aging parent.
Definitely. And I always say, you know, check with your tax advisor, because you want to make sure you're doing this, you know, legally and correctly. But there's also VA benefits if one of your parents had been part of you know, had been in the Army or Marine or something. There are VA benefits, so there's exemptions you can do on your real estate taxes. So there are some advantages of aging, and you should look for those credits as well.
And on top of that, this is not just if you got a couple of siblings, this shouldn't be the responsibility of just one person. All of the kids should be involved in some form or fashion, whether it is sharing financial responsibilities, but also in these situations, just having the time to be there is probably more valuable than money in some cases.
Oh, yes, and that's why the lines of communication are so important. But if you can divide and conquer with your siblings, maybe one takes care of the health, one takes care of the finances, I think that will be a good plan, to divide and conquer, because it's very hard when one person is sole responsible. And often you see one sibling may live out of town, one may be in town, so trying to figure out how the out-of-town sibling can help.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, the latest on the ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Israel and Hamas have reached a ceasefire and hostage release agreement, which still needs official approval from both sides. Let's check in with Jeff McCausland, CBS Radio national security consultant, author of the book Battle Tested, Gettysburg Leadership Lessons for 21st Century Leaders. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. This is the moment that the world has been waiting for since the October 7th attacks of 2023, when Hamas had the incursion into Israel and killed over 1,100 Israeli citizens and took dozens of hostages. And the discussion is, when will the ceasefire happen? When will the hostages be released? And it looks like we have arrived at that moment, or have we?
Well, there's still, I think, a few hurdles that have to be crossed, but we're as close to a settlement as we have been since the war began, as you mentioned. Those hurdles still remaining are an endorsement by the Israeli cabinet, which will not necessarily be as easy as one might think. There are several members of Mr. Netanyahu's cabinet, Mr. Smotrich, his economics minister, a guy named Benjamin Gavir, his national security cabinet member, who are very conservative, apparently have opposed such ceasefires, and this could actually bring down the government. But if Mr. Netanyahu can get past that hurdle, then there's some final lingering questions on where the Israelis will be allowed to maintain their military forces, the so-called Philadelphia corridor between Egypt and Gaza, as well as a buffer zone in the north and some presence in the center of Gaza, though Israeli military forces will move physically out of the populated area.
Hey, this is also has been a frustrating process for the United States, serving as a broker between both Hamas and Israel, and frustrating in the sense that it seems like American negotiators in the Biden administration were trying to hammer out an end to fighting between two parties that just didn't want to do it.
No, that's exactly right. In fact, the general outline of this agreement, Rob, is pretty much what President Biden and the negotiators had proposed or working on since May. And it comes at the moment, of course, at the end of the Biden administration. Ironically, the president is scheduled to speak to the nation tonight in sort of a valedictory address. And I'm sure he's quite anxious at this moment to be able to say to the American people that a ceasefire has been negotiated, a significant number of the hostages are going to be released very soon, and then a final negotiated settlement for an end to the war and the release of all the hostages.
And then what does this say about Israel's standing in the Middle East since October 7th? Over the past year and a half, almost a year and a half, Hezbollah's leadership has been decapitated. Hamas certainly decimated just because of the sheer amount of military might that has been brought down upon them. So where is Israel right now strategically in the region compared to where it was in October of 2023?
Yeah, I think there's bad news and good news, Rob. Quite frankly, on the global stage, Israel's reputation, I think, has been damaged to some degree, though everyone decries the murder of 1,200 or more Israelis by Hamas back in October of 23. The conduct of the war by the Israelis that have resulted in over 45,000 Palestinians being killed, the majority being civilians and noncombatants, well over 100,000 being injured, Gaza as a community being absolutely destroyed, water, health care, housing, et cetera, has damaged its standing internationally. In the region, though, you could say Israelis have come out in really good shape. They have decimated Hamas, decapitated the leadership, and really reduced its standing as a military force dramatically. In the same vein, they have destroyed a large portion of the military capability of Hezbollah in Lebanon, which was a major threat and another client of Iran. And then, of course, they've had a couple of exchanges of fire with Iran directly, which have taken out a lot of Iran's ability to defend itself, air defense, as well as its ability to produce longer-range rockets. So Iran, which is really the enemy that Mr. Netanyahu would talk about most as central to Israel's national security, is the most vulnerable position possible. And then on the top of that, of course, you've had this striking change in the region with the collapse of the Assad regime in Syria. That remains to be seen how that's going to change the region in future, but it's going to be dramatic.
Jeff McCausland, CBS Radio national security consultant, thank you for joining us today.